F1A. Number 8B.
Yes. So, Sefnaya is so important for us. So that it shows, don't give up with Habakkuk. Mostly we give up with Habakkuk. We say, I haven't made the demonstration, I can't make the demonstration, I don't understand enough. My practitioner is not good enough, he's not a very good practitioner, we didn't make the demonstration, and I don't know. You hear it all that. That's Habakkuk. That's how he ends in his prophecy. That nothing is good anymore, still is not good, in spite that he has tried spiritually to set things straight. It is therefore Sefaniah that has to come and say to us, look here, the solution is there, the solution is only hidden, you can't see it yet, because apparently within your consciousness you have not really made the day of the judgment, the day of the Lord, a day of judgment. Apparently you have not yet seen right through within your consciousness why evil is nothing, why error has no power. Apparently you have not really wiped out in your consciousness all the arguments of evil. Perhaps you still have within yourself a sense that the problem, the negative problem, has a person, place, or is a thing, that the problem has power, has a law, that the problem acts and has force on you and influences us, that the problem has somehow a channel to work through it, that it works through people, through a situation. You name it as something, you define it in a evil, and so on, and you find out suddenly that you have a whole army of arguments that are still within yourself that say, no, the spiritual idea is not good enough. And so Sefaniah asks us to destroy all those arguments and just take them and say, by the horns, and say, all these arguments that try to come up, why the spiritual evidence is not shown forth in material evidence, why that is not so, that you begin to handle all those claims that come up in your mind, one by one. That's why the whole text is full of that sense of destroying and wiping out and slaying and consuming and cutting down and so on. It gives that sense at Christianity that we have to practice and our ideas, that we have to stand to what we see and not to give in at the very first moment. Then he says, you know, there is a remnant always. The spiritual idea is that remnant. That remnant has been untouched. It's hidden from your sight, but it's there. Sefaniah means he who Yahweh has hidden. The idea is hidden. And it says, but if you destroy all the arguments that creep up in your consciousness, then the idea, the remnant, will be established again. It's the return of the remnant. Thou shalt see evil no more. He ends it up. Thou shalt see evil no more. Because the remnant, the idea, is complete and perfect and is closed with everything that the idea needs to have. So we have at that point then the actual physical demonstration of our spiritual vision. That's the point in it. And when we read it, we'll see the beauty of how he builds it up and how at the end of the prophecy he shows how we can build up our consciousness through the word order so that it is full of the glory of God, and then shows through the inverted word order how from that throne of grace we can see that evil can come up no more. Thou shalt not see evil any more. What else would we like to demonstrate than that? It's a terrific, clear and powerful prophecy. Let's go and see what the last of the four Ezekiel has to tell us. Now, Ezekiel is a long text, a very long text, and a very interesting text. Who was Ezekiel? One knows that Ezekiel was delivering his prophecy while Israel was in Babylonian captivity. So apparently it's good to be in trouble. When one is in real trouble, like in a captivity, then our best spiritual qualities are awakened and we begin to struggle with the idea, like Jacob did struggle with the angel, and we begin to struggle with the idea until we see clear and clearer what is the answer, what is the way that is opening up, where we have to go. And Ezekiel must have been apparently a young man, just like Zechariah afterwards, a young man living in the Babylonian captivity, and one thinks that he is the one that was writing the days of creation. We know that the days of creation were written in captivity because it's written in the priestly document, and the priestly document was the document that was written in the Babylonian captivity. So to be in captivity must be quite a healthy thing for a nation and for an individual. And so Ezekiel was delivering his prophecy, in which he again was trying to show that understanding is the important point. We are now at the horizontal understanding. But it wasn't just saying we need understanding, like Isaiah did. Isaiah just said, look here, Israel does not understand, but Israel should understand. So that was the first big proposition. Jeremiah said, yes, that understanding should be in every individual's heart. The individual must know God, and the individual must have a direct understanding of God. He does not need to have a mediator between him and God. The Levites that are in between Israel and God, who have the job to represent Israel to God. You don't need such a personal mediator. You have direct access to the knowledge of God. And you should know it, and that law should be put into your heart, engraved in your heart with a point of a diamond and the pen of an angel, so to say. But Ezekiel says, yeah, you know, this is asking a lot, just to say you should understand God if you don't know how to understand him. And he makes up his mind to show how Israel could understand God. And he says that the idea is only then safe when we know how to understand the idea. It's not just enough to say in a class, well, you have to understand God, you have to understand the textbook. To say, well, read the textbook, understand it. You must not believe in it, you must understand it. And so, and the student will say, oh, yes, yes, I should understand it, I should not believe in it. But how will he understand it? So the Ezekiel shows a method. He's the first one who shows the whole system of how to understand the idea of God. So he begins to show that there is an ordered way of understanding. He's delivering his whole message, his whole prophecy, in the layout of the 7 days of creation, and shows the 7 days of creation, mind in the three subtones, spirit in the three subtones, then soul and principle in the five subtones, life in four subtones, truth in the six subtones, and love in the two subtones. He shows the order of the days of creation, which is the ordered way of understanding. So instead of just proposing you should understand, he shows them how to understand and gives him a method through the days of creation. But not only that, he begins to see that within the days of creation there is another category beginning to work. Namely, he begins to see the four in it. He begins to see how in the days of creation the Word, the Christ and Christianity are the moving power in that understanding. And so he begins to see that ideas are numerals of infinity, that they are therefore blending with all the other ideas. And so he begins to show something about the calculus. So he begins to talk about the wheel, which is a circle where the first day of creation goes up to the climax of the seventh day and builds the bridge again to the first day, and the spiral goes on. So he sees wheels within wheels. He sees categories within categories. And he begins to show that we must have a measuring rod, and that with that measuring rod we can calculate the whole of being. And therefore he calculates and calculates and calculates. He shows the measure of the city, shows the measure of the tower, he shows how many towers there are, how long the walls are, how thick the walls are. He measures every little detail. One gets nearly bored reading chapter after chapter what he measures. And that's right, that's what he had to do, to bring home to us that spiritual reality can be measured, that there is an infinite divine calculus. So that in the symbolism of the city and the towers and castle and the doors and the windows and the thickness of the wall and so on, he shows that every detail can be measured. That being, infinite being, no matter in how infinite way being expresses itself as ideas of being, everyone can be calculated, so that we get the divine infinite calculus. It's quite terrific to see that he was the first one to show us how to get understanding. You see, the Bible only showed get understanding with all your understanding, get understanding. Well, how? Everybody would like to have understanding. Everybody in the Christian Science movement would like to have understanding. They know very well that everything depends on understanding, but nobody shows them how to get understanding. They only show them isolated truth, but not understanding. Understanding means that truth must be seen in their relationships. And only if we see truths related to other truths, and those truths related to other truths, until they all hinge together in one coherent, consistent whole or system, then only then we have understanding. Then knowledge becomes understanding. With knowledge alone, we cannot go very far. Yes, so what does he calculate? That's another point in Ezekiel. We have seen Ezekiel is in the vertical of Christianity, which shows the preservation of the idea. So the focal point is idea, not God. Therefore, what he calculates is the compound idea man. 99 times he speaks about the Son of Man. The Son of Man, the Son of Man, thou Son of Man. And always it's the Son of Man that calculates and calculates and calculates. Can you see that he tries to show that man, so to say, is infinitely endowed with the Spirit of God. And with that Spirit of God, he can calculate reality. He can calculate his life, his being, his mission, everything. So that finally we could say man is a divine, infinite calculus. Just as later on in Jesus' sayings, Jesus said, you are the city, you are the calculus, you are the calculus of ideas. So the point again is on ideas as a calculus of ideas. Yeah. That's Ezekiel, a prophet that perhaps has not been considered well enough, which is a pity, because he really shows how an understanding can develop to the point where we see the compound idea man. All right, now we have another few minutes. I don't want to start with another vertical, but this gives us time to go over this vertical again. I always felt, all through those many years that I was studying this subject and teaching this subject, that one is apt to make a big mistake as a student. That one is very willing to put a lot of hours and effort into the study of a subject, like the Bible, like the textbook, or studying John Dorley's Bible reports or my books. That the student usually is willing to put a lot of study into a subject, but that he makes the mistake to think that's what is asked of me to do, or this is the most I can do, or this is the climax of what is necessary to understand science. It isn't. It is only the beginning. I feel, and I made the experience, that very few students can sit back, as what I say, sit back. You could also say pray, or contemplate, or ponder. It's all the same thing. Which means to put away one's notes, to put away the text, the letter, and sit back and say, what does it actually convey what I have studied? Without looking to the notes, and begin to realize and to ponder what that which I have studied means to me. What it involves for me, what are the impact on me, what are the consequences for me, to ponder all those questions that come up, because that is that which gives to the letter its substance, its spiritual substance. That's why I say, once I have, say, intellectually run through a category, that then I say, now this is only intellectual, this is only the wordy sense of it, the letter sense of it. Now, what does it mean? And I take enough time to sit in a very comfortable armchair, you know, where you don't feel your body anymore, and are very nicely tucked in into a nice big armchair and sit down and look into immensity and say, what's happening there? What did I study about that immensity of being? And going over that time and time and time again, not only once. If you go over it once or twice or 10 times, it's still somehow thinking, it's still somehow remembering remembering what I should think, what is in that box, in that vertical. How did the prophet tell it? What were his words? And that is still hanging back to the letter. We should be getting completely free of the letter sense so that we just hear the tones. Here, for instance, we would sit back and say that third vertical is a very important vertical. It's under the impact of the roof category of the Christ idea, which means that I feel that the Christ constantly comes to me and to the universe. I have a sense that whatever going on in the world, that doesn't matter. One thing that matters is that the Christ idea is coming to the whole universe right here and now. And I get the roof category. And at the vertical of Christianity, I see that that Christ that comes to me and to the universe has one great purpose, namely to keep his idea, the Christ idea, intact, so that nothing can touch that idea. And so I begin to feel that this is a great power at work that safeguards every one of God's infinite ideas. And then my thought comes to Nahum and says, therefore, there is no error that can exist that is bigger than truth. No error can withstand truth. Truth is always bigger. And I get inwardly a kind of peace that says, truth will be always the victor, no matter how dreadful the argument may be, how big the fortress may be that I have to knock down. Truth will do it. Truth will be stronger. And there comes upon me a certain sense of certainty, only a certain sense of certainty, because we know the human mind well enough that says, but, and it says, but I don't see it. I don't see it expressed. I can't see it in the world. If I look out into the world, I see the very opposite. Habakkuk. Habakkuk sees with his eyes, with his mortal mind, with his human mind, from a material standpoint, he sees the very opposite. So within me I say, oh, be careful. Go up to the tower. Look out from the Christ idea. Look out from God. Don't look out with your eyes into the universe. Look out from God. And from God, you must be sure, live by faith. You must be sure that from God's point of view, things are very different. That you see the superabundance of being from that point of view. That the knowledge of God is bigger than the water that covers the sea. It's more abundant than that. And you begin to see the abundance of it. And you stick to that vision. And that vision says, well, in spite of my spiritual work, things don't seem to budge. It's still the same. The problem doesn't seem to yield. And so within ourselves, we have to go to the third one, to Zephaniah, and see, the problem only doesn't budge because I have not seen the nothingness of all the arguments that are around us. All the suggestions that come up during the day. They come up and pop up and say, yes, it's not so, it is not powerful enough, you can't do it, you don't have enough understanding, you are not advanced enough, you haven't been good enough, you haven't seen the right thing, you haven't touched the right idea, and I don't know what, you know all that, huh? All those arguments come up, and if you knock them down one by one in your in the silence of your contemplation, then things begin to move. And suddenly you begin to see that things begin to change. And the moment something begins to move and to move and to move, it's always that the Christ idea is pulling through that little by little, really, the erroneous arguments fall, they are destroyed, and the remnant is left over. And inwardly you feel suddenly the strength and the power of the idea. And see, inwardly, nothing can touch that idea. That idea is from eternity to eternity, and nothing can touch it. Nothing can overthrow it. And as we see that, we begin to realize that that is a measure of understanding. That's not the measure of thinking, that's not the measure of argumentation, arguing for truth and against error, but that it must be a measure of understanding. So that the idea is only preserved then when I know how to get understanding. And Ezekiel tells us that. As a step by step, how we start out with the days of creation, with let there be light, how that light unfolds through the second day, how it becomes more definite, that then it is an idea in a governing principle that always will bring forth a new life, a new way of life, a new method of life, the newness of life, which is the solution, the Christ to the situation as truth, and therefore shows that from everlasting to everlasting, all was complete and fulfilled. This is the story of the third vertical. You have heard it, I have said it, but do that. Go home and take time, quiet time, and just flow through it again. And when you flow through it for the 20th time or the 50th time, you will feel that something takes form, spiritual form, within you, that becomes tangible, and that little by little you will feel that you can go through that whole vertical as one category, that it just flows one into the other, so that it becomes a compound category, so that we don't have to think anymore, now where do I have to start? Oh yes, I think, now what was the first one? Oh yes, it was Nahum. Yes, I should start with Nahum, yes. Oh, what did he say? Oh yes, did he say this and that and so on? And what comes next? I don't know. Oh yes, that's next comes this and that. See, that's not treatment, huh? That's just the beginning of putting things straight in one's consciousness until it flows without thinking. Without thinking. Then it is spiritual consciousness and tangible spiritual consciousness. Yes. So this afternoon, we'll go on to the next prophet.